I'm Dr. Daniel Peterson, a fellowship-trained, board-certified foot and ankle surgeon at Sheridan Orthopedics. Our expert team offers advanced, compassionate care to keep you moving through both surgical and non-surgical treatment plans. Whether you are struggling with arthritis, muscle strains, tears, or other issues causing pain or discomfort, the team at Sheridan Orthopedics is here to get you back on your feet so you can get back to doing what you love. See SheridanOrtho.com today to learn more about our team. Sheridan Orthopedics, your next step starts with us.
This is Brad at Prime Rate Motors Super Trailer Store, here to tell you we are completely stocked up with all types of aluminum and steel livestock trailers. We carry the most proven, durable brands like Wilson, Merritt, Murhau, and GR. With over 30-plus in-stock models available, we are eager to make you a deal you cannot resist. All types of trade-ins are accepted and financing is available. That's Prime Rate Motors, 2305 Coffeyne Avenue, and online at primeratemotors.com.
Wild-caught Alaskan salmon comes with Designing Dinner's Sagewood North Cafe's signature Cajun honey butter. It's got a little bite, which you control. Add their baked corn casserole or ask for tossed salad when you place your order, and they're happy to make it. Also, chocolate rum pecan pie for dessert? Yes, please. See their take and bake and lunch menus at designing-dinners.com or swing by 615 Broadway in Sheridan. Open weekdays from 11 till 3 for lunch and 9 to 5 for dinner pickup.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Monday, September 22nd. From Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, we're talking about movies with Museum at the Bighorns director Carrie Ettinger and operations manager Chip King. All right, good morning, guys. Welcome back to the show.
Morning.
It's good morning.
It's good having you here, Carrie. Most of the time, you've got a meeting or things that you got to go to.
Lots of things. It's good to be back, yes.
But it's good to know that things are getting done out there at the museum. I know everyone's really looking forward to the big grand opening, which is still a ways away, but it is on the way.
It is on the way.
Yeah.
And as I say, we're going to open that exhibit space in phases because we can't really hold out for a grand opening of everything. And we would like community members to come back and see our progress. So keep visiting, and we'll keep you informed as things evolve.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, and that was something Carrie and I talked about is, do we open it in one great big huge foul swoop, or like Carrie just said, you know, we'll open this and we'll continue working on that, and then we'll open that, and then we'll open that 2.0 and 3.0 and... Yeah, we'll keep them coming back.
How is the construction going?
Slow. we ran into some glitches and some permitting issue, and we're hoping to get electricians in there to get it roughed out. We have been talking with our contractor, and they've assured us that by Christmas stroll, we will have floors, walls, and lights in there. So
fantastic.
That's, you know, and really that's what it is. It's just floors and walls and electrical. The, you know, I'm not an electrician, so I don't know, you know, all the ins and outs that they have to do, but it's a lot more simple build than that front lobby space was.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't even think about it, but I'm sure the entire lighting system had to be changed.
Yes. Because think of just old fluorescent fixtures, and then we need a grid space for each exhibit area.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a different kind of lighting, and it's an old building, so it's also, we want our own, how do you call it, electric box?
Yeah.
That's the right word.
Yeah, we're, electrically isolated from the rest of the building. And so,
because the whole building is kind of on its own one system.
Oh, wow.
So it's a lot of rerouting. And even downstairs where the collection is stored, that we finally have electricity in the back part of that basement. All that lighting was removed, because of, you know, all the changes throughout when it was Woolworth's to a print place. And so now we have our own lighting and electrical switches for that in that collection space. So we can do some cleanup now and start to unpack there. That's just kind of a recent add. Yeah. Now upstairs is the next part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when it comes to downstairs, all these conversations talking about Chip being in the basement, going through stuff, you know, Carrie kind of rummaging through the boxes, I always kind of pictured you in a very dark basement.
Well, yeah.
At one time it was. Yes. It was very dark.
You go down there with a flashlight.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's good to hear. You've got lights down there now. Everything's working out really well. There has been a snafu, but I think when it comes to those internal things, there always is.
Oh, yeah.
At some point.
Anyone who's been through any kind of construction, I mean, you run into hiccups.
Yeah, especially when you start playing with plumbing, you start playing with electricity, get into the infrastructure behind the walls, then it starts to get really complicated. Are there been any other challenges that you can think of right off the top of your head when it comes to the construction? How's the exhibit construction going?
Oh,
well, we're in planning stages and getting the Upland design team to work out a basic floor plan. And now it's me still learning the collection, of course. That's my biggest challenge. But what goes in those spaces that we have the broad themes, Bighorn Mountains, downtown Sheridan. So now it's kind of digging into those details of the placement of those exhibit spaces and the floor plan. Like, for example, for the Bighorn Mountains, I tried to pull everything that we have about the Tongue River Tai Flume photographs, and we have large tongs that they lifted the logs out of the flume. I tried to lift them and move them myself, and you have to be a very strong person to do that.
Big tongs.
Yes. And then we have cabinets that were given to the museum from the Custer Battlefield because they're in a remodel of building a new visitor center. So we have donated, they donated to us, excuse me, three of those cabinets. So we are working them in the space. One of those cabinets will hold the fossils from, they are now called the Wyoming Natural History Museum at the college. So that's a partnership to, because we do not have fossils in our collection. But they will be local fossils, and it's a portion of our landscape history that we would like to share with the community. So these planning stages are now happening now. Summer has died down with events. So really digging into that now.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's absolutely fascinating. And I love the partnership between you and the Natural History Museum up there because, you know, the trade-offs that you guys could possibly make. Hey, show this a little bit. We'll show that a little bit. I think it's fascinating. And because what it does is it just feeds curious people like myself who may wander into a town. Longtime listeners know I always love to go to local museums because that's really the starting point to get to know a town for me. Been to a lot of them throughout this state. And if they say, hey, you know, that comes from this museum.
Right.
Well, I'm going to go up there and check that out too. And vice versa. So I think that's great, these partnerships that are being formed like that. Those cabinets that were donated, what do those look like? Are those just large, kind of typical, what I'm picturing?
Oh, they're beasts.
Massive.
Are
yes.
They? Yeah. They are, when they were installed up there, they were never moved. And part of the reason is they're made out of quarter-inch steel.
My goodness.
They are beasts. They are almost 10 feet long. They are 9 feet tall, 8 feet, 9 feet tall. They're only like, you know, 30 inches deep, but they're made, it's like C-channel. And it's just it's quarter inch steel ribs that then is just skinned in, you know, a melamine, you know, high density board.
Uh-huh. My goodness. So those things are really solid protection for whatever you want to put in there. Great choice to go with that. Now, Chip, there's been a little bit of operation.
Mm-hmm.
As the construction's still kind of going on over your shoulder, how's it been people coming in, visiting?
Oh, yeah. Some stuff? Yeah. People are still coming in. As we track foot traffic and stuff like that, we have in the 3.5, almost 4 months now that we've been open, we have had more foot traffic on Main Street than we had in an entire year.
Wow.
On Fifth Street. Sales are roughly on par. I was hoping that sales would pick up, you know, more, but, you know, it's the first, you know, first opening on Main Street. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, I set the bar higher than what I, you know, probably realistically should have. But yeah, great foot traffic, a lot of good comments. And as foot traffic allows, and maybe it's a local person that's come in and, you know, they've talked about, oh, my dad, you know, donated this, or my dad was this person, or my grandfather or whatever. We'll take them back into the back and, you know, show them the construction and see what's happening. And people are always just amazed at how much that space opens up in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Carrie and you know, the exhibit has a lot of space to fill, and it is just, it's been challenging. It's been great. It's been fun. It's been exciting. You know, all of the adjectives like that, that you can, you know, come up with. But, yeah, I mean, construction is still continued and people are still in there, even when, you know, they're cutting tin and, you know, cutting wood and pounding on, you know, boards to get them into place or out of place.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's been its own excitement this summer.
And, you know, I think it's really unique because residents can go in there.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, in their own way, be a part of this evolving, you know, a museum of their history, and just pop in maybe, you know, once a month even, and just kind of hang out for a moment, ask some questions, get the information.
Oh, yeah.
And then just pop out and just stay up to date with what their museum's doing.
Right.
Carrie, as you're going forward, you're digging through all this stuff. You're deciding what goes where.
Right.
What exhibit are you most excited about in the very near future?
Well, it would be, we are going to have a rotating exhibit space that changes out every 6 months. And that's, once we're settled in and have all the exhibits up, this is what's going to be our changes every year, that community members can see something different. At least visit us twice a year is what I'm hoping. You push the boundary a little more for me and ask them to come every month. But I am planning the two 2026 exhibits. And as you know, 2026 is a big year. It is America's 250th birthday. It's also the 150th anniversary of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. So to start for January through June, we will show Jessamine Spear Johnson's photographs. She attended with her family the 50th anniversary in 1926 of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. And so I'm working with the Spear Johnson family to pick what photos and then start planning the exhibit, and also looking for some 1926 memorabilia to also accompany what those that weekend look like. So it's a little bit of looking at a previous event with this big anniversary date that's coming up, but also the Spear Johnson family had a ranch in Kirby, Montana, so they were also neighbors with our regional tribes. So it's kind of how a lot of those photographs were able to be taken, because they also lived there. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of different kind of look at relationships. We're not looking at it as a government event.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
More on the people aspect.
More from the family's point of view, mm-hmm. which I think is great. You know, regular everyday Americans.
Right. So that will be also part of the interpretive information accompanying the photos, is that everyday aspect of ranching, neighbors, And then they all live near the battlefield.
Wow, that's going to be a great exhibit.
And from my understanding, a section outside of the battlefield was a winter pasture. So we have some landscape photos of that area. So more to come on that. I'm also learning, too, about that. So I believe that will be a good show to kick off our 2026 opening. And then July through December will be our 250th American Celebration exhibit. We will be highlighting All American Indian Days because that is a very unique Sheridan history. And it also is community relationships building mm-hmm. and a big step for Sheridan to cross those boundaries with holding that event through the 50s, through the mid-1980s. So that will be elements of a lot of temporary loaned materials from Miss Indian Americas. They're either the ones that are still currently with us or from families, and also their experiences of coming to Sheridan. They also lived in Sheridan for a year with host families. So there's a lot of background information to also be part of those interpretive information, you know. And yeah, that is just kind of starting in the works and beginning those conversations too. So I can't talk details of what objects we will be showing. Just right now, I'm in the beginning conversations of think about three items that you would like to loan the museum for this exhibit. And we'll also work on programming, of course, from July 4th through the fall. So,
and we'll talk a little bit about that programming right around the corner. More with our museum at the Bighorns right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Child Development Center.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
So, who was the genius that decided to call them jet skis when motorcycles wasn't even taken yet? Well, the same goes for you fixing or tuning up your own 4x4 side-by-side because you won't do it. And if you do it, why, you'll just do it wrong. You got to get that machine to Hando's Service Center. Hando's is local boys who learned engines way before they learned long division. Hunting season's here, so don't risk walking back to the truck. Get there and then get back again on a machine set up for you by Hando's Service Center on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
Winner of The Voice and rising national talent, Huntley brings raw, powerful sound and magnetic stage presence to the YO Theater as part of his hometown tour, Saturday, September 27th at 7 p.m.
Oh, Virginia, baby, oh, my pretty lady, yes, I'm gonna make you mine.
With a unique blend of rock, soul, and country influences, Huntley's deeply emotional performances and distinctive sound have captivated fans across the country.
I'm holding on. Yeah, I'm not letting go.
Don't miss this opportunity to experience Huntley live in Sheridan. Tickets are available now at the YO box office or online at yotheater.com.
To fire and flame.
Looking for an investment with staying power? Synergy Shop of Miniums in Sheridan is the smart choice for stable, long-term returns. Own your own commercial space, lease it, grow a business, or resell for profit. With high demand and limited availability, these Shop of Miniums are smart money. Built to last, designed to earn. Don't miss your chance to own real property with real potential. Contact Sheridan Realty Associates and ask about Synergy Shop of Miniums and invest smart.
Today's the final day for the fall online marketplace at SharedMedia.com. Extend your outdoor season with a portable propane fire pit from Dalton's RV. $100 gift cards to Frackleton's. $500 gift card to Pride and Groom. Round out the golfing season at Hidden Bridge Golf Course. With your bid starting at 50% of retail value, your dollar goes a lot further. Shop for you, shop for Gibbs, shop now. Online auction marketplace ends tonight at SharedMedia.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting, and this morning we're speaking with Museum at the Bighorn's director, Carrie Ettinger, and operations manager, Chip King. All right. Now, before we took a break, I said we'll talk about programming. That'll come up just around the corner. But first, I want to talk about beginning October 1st, your hours are going to shift.
Yes. Carrie and I talked about what our fall and winter hours should look like and when. Everyone usually uses Labor Day, you know, very first part of September, and there's still a lot of tourists in town. And so Carrie and I decided, you know what, rather than September, we'll do October. And so, we're switching up hours October 1st, and we're going to be closed on Sunday and Monday now. And then the rest of the week, it is going to be 10 to 5. We won't have the extended hours. Now, that being said, you know, I mean, Christmas stroll, you know, week leading up to Christmas, things like that. You know, of course, we're going to have holiday hours. Mm-hmm. But we're going to cut back and kind of cut back the hours like most all of the other businesses on Main Street and be closed on Sunday and Mondays. And then 10 to 5 the remaining days of the week.
Fantastic. Last time, I do believe it was the last time you and I talked, we spoke about the fundraising. Carrie, how's fundraising going for the second phase?
Well, we are kicking back into fundraising now that summer is done. And we need $21,000 more to make that $50,000 match from the Roberts Family Foundation. And we will do something around the Christmas stroll as a fundraising event, but also just get back into the swing of mentioning it more now that everybody's settled back in school and back from vacation. The end of summer is kind of a sporadic time to try to get people's attention. But I believe that we will make that goal by the end of the year. We've had a lot of support through spring and the early part of summer.
Now, one of the partnerships I wanted to talk about was the Library of Congress collections to be incorporated within educational programming. Explain this for me.
So the museum at the Bighorns just recently received a grant for $25,000, and that is with the Teaching with Primary Sources Great Plains region. So this grant has a lot of groups affiliated with it. So that is our regional group that is the backing for this grant. So it is coordinated by a national group called the National Council for History Education, and they support the Library of Congress's mission and collection to promote the collection to be used within national schools.
Oh, wow.
K through 12 after school programs. And it just kind of also builds as a national resource. If you're looking for something, you can go and search on the Library of Congress website. You can include these materials within our museum's educational materials. So our museum's educational programs have been sitting dormant for 3 to 4 years. And as you know, community programming and educational programming is a large part of my background.
Absolutely.
And I see a lot of potential with the museum, that not only the exhibits, but the collections being used as the resources for schools. We did the YMCA 3 backyard camps this summer and did the walking tour. And that was kind of the start, since our exhibits and things are still under construction. But we have educational trunks that we inherited, and I will use this funding to revive the trunks. Right now we're going through them and inventorying what items. We have a coal site trunk that talks all about the coal sites north of Sheridan. We have older games like marbles, and it's filled with all these different games from the time period. And then another one is the Native American trunk. So we'll inventory all them and kind of see what else we need. And it's not just the museum's decision. It's also meeting with the school's teachers. Yeah. As we know, third and fourth grade curriculum, third grade revolves around local history. Fourth grade is statewide history, and also including our tribal neighbors within that conversation. So it's also seeing what else they need in their curriculum to take these trunks out, but also to visit the museum once we have the exhibit space open, bring out pieces of the collection, start building activities around them, which is my favorite part of programming.
I think that's great, because yes, I can remember being in school and someone would bring something up. It would be just a day's activities or something. But then all of a sudden now you've wet my whistle. Now I want to go and learn more about this thing and, you know, drink all that history. And most of the time, you know, it was dealing with like the Oregon Trail and pioneer stuff, things like that. But that's really what got me going. I was lucky. My father's kind of a amateur historian. So I'd go home and say, hey, Dad, we learned about this today. And he'd say, go grab me this book off the shelf. Oh, okay. And the next 3 hours of my time were consumed, with him really expanding on all of this stuff that I learned from school. And to think that a kid could do that, you know, hey, they brought in this really cool coal trunk today. And I didn't know anything that was going on. But now I really want to go see that. So now the family goes down to the museum and all of a sudden you get a little historian on your hands, you know?
Right, right. Or even to help with preservation. As you know, our main street is part of the National Registry. We would like to see those buildings maintained and around for many more years. But back to the Library of Congress part. One part that I know that is Sheridan's history that's part of the Library of Congress collection, and this is from a previous land trust project, is they have Sanborn insurance maps of Sheridan. So these maps show from 1896 to the 1920, their various years, but they show all the changes of Sheridan. They also show where the water main was and things like that. But to see the streets change and also different businesses or even the growth of the town from the first three streets is also interesting. And, it's visually compelling.
Oh, yeah.
Because it documents those changes. To stand out and just say it out loud, you're not grasping it as quickly with either photos or a map. Everybody loves maps. I have not met a person that does not love a map.
Yeah, good map. Yeah. It really sets the tone for everything after that.
Yeah.
And the power of the pictures, I think, is another thing that I really like, because, you know, somebody once, I was looking up history of the University of Wyoming, and this was a story long ago, and my goodness, you know, the buildings that they first built for that university, they just were out there on the plains by themselves.
Yeah.
It looked so dang empty. Yes. I was like, my goodness, like this huge, beautiful building and nothing. Yeah. Is
absolutely
around
nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Right. Like, it really kind of shocks you.
Right.
Where you're like, it didn't even look like they had a game plan. They were just, that's a good spot. Let's put the building there.
Right. Throw a dart out there.
And see where it lands. All right. I've run out of time with you. Okay. If someone wanted to help donate, really wanted to help contribute to this effort, how could they do that?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. You can go on to the museum's website, which is museumbighorns, with an S on the end, .org, and we have a donate section. You can donate online. If you don't care to donate online, you can stop in the museum and drop off a check. We also accept cash. You can mail it in to 171 North Main Street, Suite 107. And any amount is appreciated. Any community support, even visiting the museum, helps with our attendance numbers. All those things show our growth, not even just for funding, but that the community is interested, that the museum continues with its progress, which is important.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to all the programming kicking back off again, because I felt like the museum had to close and relocate during a time when we were just getting, you know, some really great activity.
Yeah.
Some folks, you know, with the Explore History program really kicking into gear. And then you had programs where you'd grab a six-pack of beer and go hang out and talk about
exactly
history.
Right.
And it was popular. People are really into this. Yes. And so I think you guys are going to have your hands full after you do all this work. I don't think it's going to stop, but I want to
thank you. Good problem to have.
It is a good problem to have. It's an excellent problem.
That's why we were just going to continue with opening in phases, because we can't be closed to the community any longer.
Right.
And just grow with us, please. That's all we ask.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for coming in this morning. It is always a pleasure having you guys on. All right. When we return, we're going to speak with the Antelope Butte Foundation. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Child Development Center.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Pit Crew to You is changing the way people buy tires forever. No more sitting endlessly in a tire shop.
That rubber smell.
Working your schedule around their availability, hoping you can find affordable prices. They bring the tire shop and the deals to you. Pit Crew to You carries the major brand tires at discount prices that won't break the bank. It's easy to shop, schedule, and save. For fast, professional, and affordable service, just visit pitcrew2u.com today. Pit Crew to You. They change your tires, not your schedule.
Believe it or not, it's not too early to begin thinking about the upcoming holiday season, and Moss Holders can help you get your home ready for guests. Right now, all dining room and all bedroom furniture at Moss Holders is on sale. Whether you'd like to add seating to your kitchen or dining room, or update a spare bedroom, now's the ideal time, as nearly every single special order will arrive in time for the holidays. Moss Holders has access to hundreds of dining and bedroom sets, so you can find the one that fits your style best. That's Moss Holders Bedroom and Dining Sale, going on now. Moss Holders, furniture is our passion.
Doug, we really got to stop meeting like this.
Let me guess, mailbox again?
This time it was a decorative boulder. I swear it rolled into my car.
Bob, the Wearing Chevrolet Body Shop has you covered. Dents, dings, bumpers, bruises. We've seen a lot worse. Remember the guy who tried to wax his car with cooking spray?
I can't feel better now.
Our crew will fix it right, match the paint perfectly. It's what we do.
Wearing Chevrolet Body Shop, fast, friendly, fully prepared for whatever you run into. 107 East Alger, wearingsheridan.com.
Sage grouse hunters, be sure to have your required sage grouse permit with you when you head out for your hunt. The permit is free on the Wyoming Game and Fish Department website or at regional offices. The permit helps the department survey sage grouse hunters and helps in the management of the species. All licensed sage grouse hunters must carry the permit along with their game bird license. This includes daily, annual, lifetime, and pioneer license holders. Good luck in the field this fall. Sponsored by the Wyoming Game and Fish, the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters, and the station.
Today's the final day of the fall online marketplace live on SheridanMedia.com. We've got a Polaris portable P3200 IE generator from Peak Power Sports. Retails for under $1,600, starting bid $800. $100 gift cards to Landon's Greenhouse and Nursery. We've got $150 express detail packages from Sheridan Auto Spa. With your bids at 50% of retail value, wow. Shop for you, shop for gifts, shop now though. Click on the fall online marketplace. Bidding ends tonight at SheridanMedia.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. For a second part this morning, I'm joined by Antelope Butte Recreation Area and Foundation General Manager, John DeVivo. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Morning, Floyd. Thanks for having me.
Now, when it comes to folks who may not know what Antelope Butte is, or its foundation. Can you explain just exactly what it is and how the foundation fits into that?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Antelope Butte Foundation is essentially a group of board members. It started back in 2011. The ski area had gone defunct in 2004 and went bankrupt and sold all of the assets to the U.S. Forest Service and to Bighorn National Forest. A local group was formed on both sides, as they say. Some folks from Grable and Shell, some folks from the Ranchester-Sheridan side came together and said, we want our ski area back. And it took them until 2018 to really rebirth and revitalize the ski area, buy the assets back, and reopen in 18 and 19. And they reopened as a nonprofit rather than as a for-profit, with the expressed intent of providing affordable and accessible year-round outdoor recreation for the kids and families of this region. So there aren't a lot of nonprofits out there in the ski industry. There are 480 ski areas, give or take a few, in the United States, and there aren't a whole lot of nonprofit ski areas that operate this way. You know, and in terms of the number one thing that sets us apart, we are the only ski area in the country that offers free season passes or free day tickets to any kid on the planet who is age 17 or under.
That's amazing.
Which is pretty remarkable. You know, I've been in this industry for 38 years, my entire adult life. Nobody's ever done it so cleanly and just said there's no restriction, there's no requirement on parents, there's none of that stuff. You know, and how did it work out? Well, we doubled our revenue, including philanthropy and fundraising, and we essentially doubled our skier visits. You know, we were up 60% on skier visits and twice the revenue.
That's incredible.
Last year over the previous year. So we're on a good roll. We're continuing that this year. Our board members decided in April to continue with that program, and a lot of folks around the region are pretty excited about it.
I mean, what do they talk about, you know, when it comes to accessibility? Because when I was a kid, you know, we went to the hill out back because we were, right. You know, we weren't rich. Yep. We couldn't afford to go up to Teton Village all the time, things like that. So that was just kind of like maybe once every other year you'd have that opportunity. Antelope Butte, not that way.
Right. I mean, as far as affordability, accessibility, I mean, let's face it, you have to want to get to Antelope Butte, right? We're 50 minutes from Grable. We're 50 minutes from Dayton. Maybe 55 from Ranchester, an hour and 15 to Sheridan. But we've got, as far as accessibility, we actually host 700, and this year we expect up to 1,000 kids to be coming from within a three-hour radius on our school programs, whereby we offer these kids their first day on snow for $25.
How cool.
I mean, it's pretty cool, and we've been doing that for several years now. We also have a lot of community programs that will come in. You know, for example, Tongue River Valley Community Center comes in every Friday. Without fail, they jump on their couple of buses and they're up there, and we're trying to establish more busing programs and stuff like that. We really want to make it not only affordable, but accessible as well. Because again, it's not easy to get to where we are. We're kind of in the middle, right? We're halfway from Sheridan to Shell and Grable. So you've got to come up and over from Sheridan, or you have to go down and around to get to Shell and Grable. So, and you know, to be honest with you, DOT, those guys are our heroes. I mean, there are only four businesses between Dayton and Shell, right? You've got the three lodges and you've got Antelope Butte, and DOT does a remarkable job. We love those guys. You know, they do a fantastic job of keeping us open. I've been here for two full seasons and I think we've lost one full day each season, which is pretty
impressive, pretty
remarkable.
John, how do you get involved?
How
did you get involved?
Well, I spent my, coming out of college, I spent my first 16 years in what I would call corporate skiing. So I worked for a place called Sunday River in Maine, which then bought a bunch of other skiers and became American Skiing Company. I spent the next 16 years working for the state of New Hampshire and actually running Cannon Mountain Ski Area and Franconia Notch State Park, which was New Hampshire's largest ski area and its flagship state park. And probably 6-7 years ago, I sort of had this calling and kind of a come to Jesus moment for myself. What can I do to help my own industry? What can I do to help and maintain affordable skiing and this, that, and the other thing? And then we got involved with Indy Pass and with Entebbe Systems, who are now, it's actually one company. We got involved with them at Cannon. And when I met up with Eric Mogensen, who was the founder and president of that company, he says, you know, I'm on this board at Antelope Butte Ski Area out in Wyoming, and we're a nonprofit, and we're seeking a new GM. And if you have an interest, please submit your materials. So I did a little bit of research, submitted the materials, and they started with, I believe, 25 candidates and narrowed it down to 10 and then down to 5. Came out here to interview, and I was really struck by the mission.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies. You know, my three kids were off to school. My wife was firmly established over in Maine, where she still is with our other dog, and I'm here with our other dog, and literally picked up and moved to the middle of Wyoming.
Wow.
Because I believed in the mission and what we had going on. And the timing was right in my life and our lives back home. And so now we're kind of jetting back and forth. I mean, I actually just flew into Billings last night from going home to Cape Cod for a wedding.
Oh, wow.
Of my niece. And I'm back here in the morning.
I was
struck by the mission to establish and maintain affordable and accessible outdoor recreation for the kids in our region. You know, it's essentially our mission statement. You know, again, I had always wanted a Western gig, and don't let people fool you. Everybody from the east wants to come out and dry their hand out west. It was the closest that I was ever going to get to owner operatorship, which was also a goal of mine, but I wasn't sitting on a pile of, you know, $2 million bills.
Right. Right.
And, you know, we had the mission and I mean, let's face it, with three kids in college, it was a bit more money, which made some sense at the time. And, you know, it was really a chance for us to kind of spread our wings as a family. My son is in Colorado. One daughter's in Rhode Island. The other one's in Maryland. My wife is still in Maine. So it's great for us when we do get together to be able to do stuff like this. And my daughters, of course, just joke that dad went to a cool place to take vacations.
And so they've
come out at Christmas time the last 2 years, and they've been out in the summer the last couple of years, and I fly home for special events for family and stuff like that.
That's amazing.
So, yeah.
But it's that mission that really grounded you, right?
Yeah, here. Again, I mean, when I first got out here, you know, we went through one, my first season was 23-24, and we made some strides. We were up about 9% on visits and 9% on revenue, and credit to the board, they said, you know, we've got to do something. So Eric and I proposed this crazy idea of, you know, let's do something nobody's ever done before. You know, a lot of ski areas have done 12 and under or 13 and under or something, but dad or mom has to buy a season pass to go along with it and whatnot. And we said, well, what's the worst that could happen? Let's try something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of success with it as far as just letting any kid on the planet, age 17 or under, ski and ride for free. You know, that's still amazing. Pay for lessons, and they still pay for food, and they still pay for rentals and whatnot. We try to make that as affordable as possible as well. And, you know, to be honest, there are a lot of people out there that think that every ski company out there is this deep, dark monolith that's getting rich off of people.
Right?
And that's not happening. You know, I mean, it costs an incredible amount of money to run a ski area. You know, we're at about 1.5, 1.6 million just to keep things rolling, just to keep the lights on. And we still operate in the red, and thank God for fundraising and philanthropy and people in the local area and in throughout the region who are willing to commit and make that personal sacrifice and financial sacrifice to provide affordable skiing and recreation to kids. But, you know, people think that the folks from Vail Resorts are getting rich out there and you know, the Icon Pass and the Epic Pass. And to be honest with you, most of these ski areas are probably netting 7 to 14% at most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not a get rich type of business. It's a recreation business, and you want to run it like a business. But the reality is that, you know, nobody's out there getting rich, so to speak. I mean, they have shareholders and they have to return a net and whatnot. You know, we're not, we're beholden to our board, of course, but we're not required to have any specific dollar figure or percentage point that we need to hit, which does offer us some flexibility and being able to be incredibly affordable. You know, and some would say you're subsidized, and I would say we're supported by our community that wants to be able to provide for the kids. I mean, let's face it, there's just not a lot to do around here in the wintertime other than being outside or being inside, playing on your phone.
Yep.
You know, and it used to be, when I first got into the industry, we talked a lot about how the ski industry was battling against the cruise lines or the railroads or people taking other trips. And now it's really, you're just fighting for people's time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of families aren't doing all of that travel anymore, but the kids are just preoccupied with everything else. There's certainly a health benefit, and there's a mental health benefit to being outside, and especially for kids in this region. We really want to get them outside for that first experience. And then hopefully we can get them to continue to come back and enjoy the lifestyle of skiing and snowboarding.
And you guys have made great partnerships. I speak every year with the Sheridan Recreation District, mm-hmm. and they always have a program, get the kids involved and get them up there to Antelope Butte.
Yep.
As someone who comes from the actual business of all of this itself, mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be extremely unique. As you said before, you know, holy cow, I just heard about this crazy place that's just saying, let's go do this and right. see how it works out. Yeah. How's it working out? And I don't mean like monetary figure wise, mm-hmm. but like you've been up there 2 years now. Are you seeing the place grow? Are you seeing more people head up there? Are you seeing the community take advantage of what they have?
Yeah, it's been really cool, especially over the last 12 months anyway. You know, once we started with the kids program, of course, we started seeing people from well beyond the usual 90 minutes to 2 hour driving radius. And realistically, our regulars are now coming from a 3 to 4 hour radius.
Wow.
Last year, we were seeing families come out of Florida and out of South Carolina and out of Michigan and Ohio and everywhere you could possibly imagine, because everybody knows somebody in Wyoming, right? And they were coming to visit at times. And well, if the kids are going to ski for free, you know, not only that, we offer an online ticket for $54. That's unheard of. I mean, we've got areas now charging $150, $189, $289 per day.
Oh, yeah. Incredible.
At this point, you know, so we offer an online price of $54 for an adult, $69 if you buy at the window. And a lot of folks have chosen to support us by just buying at the window. They like the flexibility of waiting to see what the weather does and deciding whether they're going to go on that day or not. You know, so our community has grown and grown and grown over the last 2 years. And this year, people will see us. You know, we're going to actually do some advertising now. Last year, the marketing campaign was the free kids program. You know, mm-hmm. this year it's all about, hey, if you're up in Billings, we want you to head south this year. If you're over in Cody, we want you to head this way this year. If you're down in Gillette or Casper, we want you to head north this year. And that may rankle some feathers with some of our competitors. But again, most of our competitors are at least 2.5 to 3 hours away. I mean, I'm from New England, where you've got 168 ski areas just in New England, New York, New Jersey. You know, out of the 480, there's probably half that are located within, you know, a couple hundred mile radius.
A stone's throw, right? Compared to Wyoming, it's a
but
stone's throw.
You know, but the ski industry is very community oriented, you know, and so one of the things we ran into is about a year ago, when we started to figure out that we were going to grow, not so much exponentially, but we were going to grow quite a bit. We said, geez, you know, we're going to need more rental gear to support these programs so that we're not running out. So I basically made 3 phone calls. One was to the president of Vail Resorts. One was to the president of Boyne Resorts. And one was to our good friend Luke down at the Sports Lure in Buffalo, and said, look, do you have any gear that you're not using, that's not obsolete, that we can use and we'll pay the shipping or whatever we need to do? So Boyne Resorts sent us 100 sets of gear. Vail Resorts sent us 50 sets of gear. Our friend Luke down at the Sports Lure sent another 50 sets of gear, kids stuff, snowboard stuff, ski stuff, you name it. And our fleet grew from 330 to over 500. So we don't run out of gear anymore and we can support these missions that we're on. You know, it really became about, you know, when we knew we were heading into this past season, we knew we had to park people a little tighter. We knew we had to feed them a little faster. We knew we had to get more ski instructors. We knew we had to do a better job with our lift, so we sped the lift up and cut our lift line times down. And we knew that we needed a larger rental fleet in order to be able to support these programs. And so these massive companies, I mean, they're not stupid. They realize that it's the little guys who feed the bigger guys, right? Yeah. And so even a 500-acre footprint, which would actually be the 8th largest ski area in New England, but I can run it here with 30 people.
Wow.
Because everything feeds down to the bottom. So I'm from a place where we would do 4,000 visits on a Saturday, you know, the skier that I ran at Cannon, we'd do 4,500 on a Saturday, and we would run it with, say, 450, 500 employees and volunteers. Now we're hosting 700 people on a Saturday, and I can run the place with 30 people.
Incredible.
You know, and so these large companies, they understand that we are the feeder program for their skiers, and so they said, of course we want to help. You know, we have gear and we basically paid for all of that stuff for the price of shipping. And then Luke said, you can just take it. And the deal with him was that we wouldn't start a seasonal rental program because that's how he makes his mm-hmm. business. And so we kind of grew on that and said, well, what if we went and did some programs with other ski shops? So now we're playing with five or six ski shops within a 3-hour radius and saying, hey, we will allow you to give away 50 adult lift tickets if people are buying a seasonal rental package from you, or if they're buying a purchase package from you. Let's have their first visit be at Antelope Butte. And again, that may rankle some feathers within our group, so to speak, of ski areas within Wyoming. But, you know, let's face it, we've got a couple of goals. We want to be the best small ski area in Wyoming, and we want to be the best skiing in the Bighorns. You know, so in addition to being a nonprofit, we are, in fact, running a business, and we do have stated goals of being the best and really raising the bar. I mean, I didn't come out here to just sort of keep the thing rolling along. I mean, we had already been saved. So when I first got out here, it was like, save Antelope Butte, save the ski area. And a couple of people corrected me and said, look, we already did that. We spent 11 years doing that and getting to that point. I said, you know, you're right. Our job is to pay homage to that group who got us to where we are and to keep that ball rolling, keep the train rolling.
Now, I've run out of time with you. Tell me how I can learn more and get a season pass.
Sure. Yeah. You'll just actually, as far as the season passes go, whether you're buying an adult pass or signing your kids up and doing the waivers, you're just going to go to estore.antelopebutte.org. And our website is antelopebuttefoundation.org.
Fantastic. John, thank you so much.
Thank you, Floyd. It's
been
great
being here.
It's
good to see all the passion that you have for this.
Yeah, I could do this. I've been doing this for 38 years, and I have another 38 years in the tank.
That's fantastic. Thanks for coming in and speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
I hope to see you again very soon.
All right, thanks, Floyd.
All right, you've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Child Development Center.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Hi, this is Kayla Carr with Sheridan Honda. Life moves fast, so should your auto service. No long waits, no runaround, just fast, friendly service done right the first time. Don't take our word for it, our customers say it best.
I am always treated to friendly, fast service. Wouldn't go anywhere else.
I was kept updated and had my vehicle back before the promised time.
Exceptional customer service, all makes and models, same day appointments. It's not just a dealership, it's Sheridan Honda.
I think about Blue Zeus, and I think, on what planet did it seem like a good idea to take this horse away from the American people?
I couldn't imagine a horse like that, losing his freedom and his family that day.
It was fun to watch him. He's a masterpiece of DNA, but to see him in his role as a stallion, I think was, that's something I'll never forget.
I knew the BLM were gonna make it difficult for us because they always had. They really don't like the idea of us reuniting families because it portrays these horses as having feelings and emotions, and they like to portray them as nothing more than livestock.
Blue Zeus, Sunday's feature film at the 8th Annual Wild Film Fest in Sheridan, October 2nd through the 5th. See the full lineup and get your tickets now at wildfilmfest.org.
From Billings to Buffalo, this is the News Talk Station, FM 103.9 and 930 AM, KROE.
KROE.